It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Later this hour, a conversation with former U.S. Poet Laureate Billy Collins. He'll be giving the Buxbaum Lecture at Drake University tonight. But first, Lou Henry Hoover, wife of President Herbert Hoover, was a remarkable woman. She was the first woman to earn a degree in geology from Stanford University. She came up with the idea for Girl Scout cookies. And now we know that she was also the first person to film the White House in color. To tell us about this remarkable discovery, we have the woman responsible for it, Lynn Smith. She is the audiovisual archivist for the Hoover Presidential Library in West Branch. Welcome back to the show, Lynn.
Good morning, Charity. Thank you for having us.
And Tom Schwartz is also here, director of the Herbert Hoover Presidential Library and Museum. Hello, Tom.
Hi, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here. And I want to mention these color films are going to be released on YouTube on Wednesday, the 29th, which is the 143rd anniversary of the birth of Lou Henry Hoover. You are also going to be playing these films at the Hoover Museum, right?
Right. Well, we'll be showing them starting at 9:30 every hour on the half hour at the Figge Auditorium in the Hoover Museum over in West Branch.
All right. So a great day to stop by and see these films. We've got a teaser reel right now on our Facebook page, Iowa Public Radio. You can also find it on our Twitter feed at IPR Talk. And Lynn, these home movies are not new. This is something that's been in the collection for a really long time, but you gave them a fresh look. What made you look more closely at these films?
Kind of a periodic review of what we have and, you know, re-inventory catalog, check out the physical condition because films can shrink or deteriorate. There's lots of anything can go wrong with, especially things that are machine. You need a machine to make it work. You know, paper you can always look at. You don't need to hold it up to the light or magnify it or do anything special. But with the films, you need a machine. We have perfectly functional projectors, but these were old enough. Like, well, I'll take a look through our a hand crank viewer. That way I can control tension. If I see something wrong, I can stop what I'm doing before it gets eaten up by a projector. Because the last thing we want to do is have any sort of film, whether it's new or old, shredded by the machine to view it. That doesn't help anybody. So looking at these films, I noticed, okay, they're black and white, but there's some vertical lines on each of the frames that didn't look familiar to any other. I looked at, you know, thousands of feet of black and white films over the years, and these vertical lines just, it's like, what am I looking at? This is not normal. So I took the film out of the viewer to look at the actual strip, and it said on the edge Kodacolor.
Like, but they were in black and white.
Right. So, like, okay, I know what color film looks like. I have my eyes checked regularly. I'm not colorblind. So why am I looking at something that's color in a black and white realm? So, you know, did a, you know, kind of a crash course on film history and looked on the internet to find some more information and came upon a blog that was written by Chris Kovacs, one of my physically distant colleagues at the National Archives in Washington. And they had a discovery from 2014 of some film from 1930 that was Kodacolor of Yellowstone National Park. It showed footage of an Iowa state senator visiting Yellowstone. So it was Senator Rule. So these films are labeled Senator Rule. So they, you know, had to figure out who he was. But they're a little, because they're the film professionals that work with all kinds of different old historic formats, were a little quicker on the draw about what they were looking at. But they still didn't know what to do with it because it still looks black and white. How do we make this Kodacolor color? What do we do? So she reached out to the Association of Moving Image Archivists, an international organization of film professionals, and got a reply from one of the members saying, our lab in Rockville, Maryland can help you with that. So they arranged a high-definition scan, sent the scans to this lab, and they have devised a software program to decode the information that's on the lines. That's the key, is the stripes I saw, the lines.
So originally, there would have been a special projector that would have decoded that?
Right, because back in the day, the camera had a red, green, blue filter on that you'd attach to the lens of the camera, shoot the film, send it in a put it in its little box and mail it back to Kodak in Rochester, New York, or if there was a closer lab somewhere else, get it back and then take the filter that was on your camera lens onto a Kodacolor projector, Kodascope projector, and it would the lenses would do all the work to make it color. So short of having those projectors because
– And there just weren't any left?
I've seen one. I saw one about 5 years ago in a wonderful museum in Tulsa, Oklahoma. But it was a museum piece. So even if I at that point had seen these films, I couldn't just – hi, museum, can we run your film – my films through your projector? They'd probably say no. And I'd be a little hesitant to want to do that. It's like, okay, I don't want to hurt your projector, and I don't want your projector to eat my, you know,
right.
crunch up my
yeah,
film. So that's going to be a lose-lose.
Right.
And even if it, you know, if there's something that doesn't work with the projector, if there's a broken part, you can't go buy another one. It's you have to make the replacement parts like an old, you know, vintage car and Model T. You can't go to the store and buy a part for that. So reading this blog describing what the film lab had done, I was like, okay. Well, let's us do that because we've got the same sort of film. I can't do anything to get color out of a black and white apparently looking film because the stripes have the – there's tiny, tiny little lenses that if you look under a magnifying glass or a microscope, you can see little prismatic lenses, and that's where that captures the color information when shot through the filters.
So – before you started the process of trying to find the place to get these processed or raising the money to get them processed, how did you tell the rest of the staff over at the Hoover Museum?
I probably first went to Tom and said, hey, look what I found. It says color and they're really different. But if they are what they say they are, and they should be, if we can find a way to successfully restore this color film – we've got film of Lou Hoover walking through the White House gardens. We've got film
in
of,
color.
In color in 1929 or 30.
Wow.
We've got Hoover playing Hoover ball. We've got there's a little tiny segment of maypole dancing, Easter egg festivities, probably from 1930.
Wow.
In these films.
Tom, do you remember when she first told you about it?
Yeah. And I went to Chris Kovacs' blog post to read about what she did for the Yellowstone. And then I reached out to Presidential Library's central office in Washington and talked to Nancy Davis, who was in charge of preservation. And I said, is there money to get this properly preserved and digital files created? And she said, well, we could add it to the list of projects and see, you know, what kind of funding we get, which to me was code.
No.
That, try again.
Right.
Yeah. And so Chris had gone to the National Film Preservation Foundation for a grant. And Lynn said, I'll write it. And I said, go for it.
So did you know at that point that not only did you have in your hands color film from the Hoover administration, but the first color film recorded at the White House?
I was suspecting that because as I dug further into the history of Kodacolor film from various websites, including Kodak's, you know, corporate history, Kodacolor started in 1928. The patent was set up in August, September of 1928, and it only ran through 1935. So it's pretty much that window of all of Hoover's administration and the first couple years of Franklin Roosevelt's. I was like, okay, unless Coolidge shot some,
this is got to be it.
This is probably it. It was a, you know, even at that point in 28. It had always been kind of an experimental – color film was kind of an experimental thing. A lot of films earlier were hand-colored. I don't know how you – what patience you'd need to color a teeny little, you know, 16-millimeter frame of film over and over and over again. That would take a lot of talent.
Right.
Like a cartoonist or something. Each little frame, each little cell has got the little character running or jumping or whatever they're doing. And I was like, okay, this is pretty cool.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
So it was kind of an easy sell for the foundation because the Film Preservation Foundation, you know, contact them first and say, this is what we have. And then they kind of quickly evaluate, yeah, we do that, or it's the 1500th copy of Gone with the Wind. No. Okay, we've taken care of that one. Thank you.
Right.
And I said, well, as far as I can tell, these are probably the first color home movies of White House activities and early Coda color just in general, no matter who's taking the pictures, is kind of an old rare old format that excites, you know, rare old format film people and just anyone else.
Absolutely. So from the point of you looking at that film and thinking, I think there's more to this, to actually getting to see the films in color. How long was that period of time for you?
Probably about 2 years from start to finish. Because looking at the films in late 14, and the film grant window was submitted the grant application in, I think it was March or so, March of April of 15. Then a couple months to, you know, do the evaluations and decide who's going to receive the grants, and then we were awarded the grant, send off the films in early summer of 15, and by Lou's birthday of last year in 2016, all of the high-res scans were done of all the frames of seven films. I forget how many hundreds of feet. So we've got to scan each little frame of each film. And they did cleaning of the films and, you know, the sort of physical restoration of it as a piece of film. And then do the scanning. And then after the scanning, they had to do the decoding to make the color back that they did in a digital format. And then from there, as part of the grant, we had to restore it into 16-millimeter film. So we have the original black and white looking film, digital copies, and a 16-millimeter color copy that you can hold up to the light and say, ah, this is color.
All right, we're going to take a short break, and then we're going to find out what it was like to actually see these films, films that you will be able to see on Wednesday, March 29th, the 143rd anniversary of the birth of Lou Henry Hoover, the first color films from the White House. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we are talking about the first color home movies ever recorded at the White House. And they were recorded by Lou Henry Hoover, wife of President Herbert Hoover. These films have been in the collection at the Herbert Hoover Presidential Library and Museum in West Branch for a long time. But Lynn Smith, the audiovisual archivist for the Library and Museum, recently discovered that they were in color. Now they have been processed, and they will be released to the public on Wednesday, March 29th. You can see them on the museum's YouTube feed, or you can actually stop by the Hoover Museum. That's Lou Henry Hoover's birthday on Wednesday. So a wonderful way to celebrate her birthday by seeing these films as they were meant to be seen. Tom Schwartz is also here with us, director of the Herbert Hoover Presidential Library and Museum. And before the break, we were just talking about that long, long process of getting, you know, from noticing that these films were probably in color to actually getting those color versions. Lynn, tell me about the first time you got to see them. And did you see them by yourself or did you all get together?
I saw them first.
All right. You probably couldn't wait at that point. So tell me what it was like.
It was like opening a door, going and walking back into time. You know, I'd seen plenty of vintage photos of the Hoovers in the 20s and 30s, but they're all black and white. So, and films as well. So this was really a fantastic opportunity to see, you know, little bits of color of, you know, his hair. I'd read, you know, authors describe, you know, whatever shades of brown his hair was and this and that. I was like, okay, now I can see him in living, breathing color and, you know, take away facial features and, you know, does he have a dimple? Is it easier to see in color than black and white? And, you know, the other films with Lou and the two dogs, Pat and Ouija. You know, Pat's a Belgian shepherd, so kind of like a German shepherd. People see those. And the Norwegian elk hound that always looks sort of, you know, real hairy, shaggy dog in kind of blacks and grays. What does Ouija really look like? kind of thing. So.
Oh, wow. Well, Tom, do you remember the first time you saw these films?
I asked Lynn to burn some DVDs, not only for myself, but for the family, because I wanted to send them out
to the
Hoover
family. Yeah.
Yeah. And so she brought in the DVD, and I, of course, put it in right away and watched it. And the first reel started out with, you know, Hoover as president-elect fishing in Florida, and showed his many the catch of a barracuda and a sailfish, which is something, you know, he had tried to catch in previous visits to Florida and had always failed. And then I sent it to the family, overnighted it, and they started sending back, you know, wow.
Oh, I can only imagine what that's like. The most storied members of your family, and now you can see them in color.
And the only thing that ran through my mind, at a very critical point, Lynn wrote up the grant. It was successfully awarded. We got the contract, and I did my due diligence and sent it to Washington and said, is it okay to sign it? Who signs this? And then legal says, well, no one can sign this because we can't agree to some of these provisions. And I just thought, oh, gosh, no good deed goes unpunished here. So they were very good about contacting legal at the National Film Preservation Foundation. And in kind of lightning speed, as far as lawyers go, it was in a matter of, I think, 2 days, they came up with an agreement that everyone could agree
wow.
to. And so it got
Oh, I can only imagine that sinking feeling of, oh, no, we did all this work and now.
Well, you know, that we thought we had the money, too.
Right, yeah.
But, you know, I mean, that's in dealing with government. You know, you just have to be patient and kind of work through the system.
So I want to talk about that fishing film because Herbert Hoover is fishing in a suit and tie?
Yep. He always thought a gentleman should be properly dressed at all times. So suit and tie, the fedora and the jacket. And, you know, think about it. Back in the 20s, you see old newsreels. Look at Ken Burns' baseball film. Those early films, the men are in suits and ties at the baseball games and the women are in dresses and hats. It wasn't T-shirts and face painting and, you know, foam fingers and all of that. So it just – part of it is he's representative of his time.
Yeah. He also had this sense of the dignity of the office. And I think it's Our next big temporary exhibit, which opens in May, will be on the presidency. And one of the things that we'll have representing Harry Truman is a floral shirt that he wore down in the little White House in Key West. So you could see how things have already kind of moved from Hoover, who's always being seen with a coat and tie. Even though many of these jackets he was wearing fishing, you know, had frayed cuffs and the like.
Wear your best jacket.
Right. It's not Sunday best.
to Harry Truman in a Hawaiian shirt. You know, I mean,
wow.
But I mean, that's one of the things which is important is to understand the context and to see the evolution of the office. People in the museum, the last gallery shows Hoover fishing, and he's in a jacket and tie. And they always ask, did he really do that?
And now we have
yes,
proof
he did.
In living color.
Yes.
So what else is in the films? We've got that fishing trip. We've got the dogs playing
the dogs,
together.
That's another long film because it's several chunks in one, well, different things going on in one film. They've got the Hoover ball game. It's Bull in the Ring or kind of a keep away thing.
And so this is actually the president playing.
Right.
This is before he invented Hoover Ball, the game.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which is similar to volleyball with the net, but.
It's based on Bull in the Ring.
Okay.
Which he saw the sailors playing when he did his goodwill tour of Latin America as president-elect.
All right. So he's playing Bull in the Ring with
other cabinet members and friends. His personal secretary, you can see him, Larry Ritchie, in the film, is wearing a medium light blue sweater and kind of coral orange slacks. Ray Lyman Wilbur, a classmate of his from Stanford, is Secretary of the Interior. He's a thin, lanky guy with a white shirt, I think maybe tan or light pants, and a black tie. He's a real stick, a real beanpole. So he's easy to spot. There's another fellow I haven't quite figured out who he is. He's wearing knickers. But he's often has his back to the camera and is like, stop, turn around. I want to see who you are. But they're moving around so much, it's hard to get a real bead on, you know, who is this fellow.
Right.
Maybe someday we'll figure it out.
And now Lou Henry Hoover, of course, was the photographer in most of these shots. There is a little bit of her on camera, though, too.
Right. And that's the other, you know, the $100 question that we may never get figured out is who was holding the camera when we see Lou playing fetch with Pat and Ouija or strolling through the gardens, chatting with the gardeners in the Rose Garden. For a while, I thought maybe it was her daughter-in-law, Margaret Watson, who was married to Herbert Jr. But in consultation with Leslie Hoover Lobel, the great-granddaughter of the Hoovers on Herbert Hoover Jr.'s side, she's like, I don't think that's Granny. I'm like, okay, that blew that theory out of the water. So maybe it's one of her personal secretaries. I'm kind of looking through the photographs we have to try to match up of who it might be.
How much film is there?
In all, there are five reels of about 50 feet and two reels of 400 feet, so about 2,000 feet.
All right. And how long does that take to?
About 30 minutes.
Maybe a little couple minutes after.
All right. And as I mentioned, I mean, this is the first color film taken at the White House, but you don't see that much of the White House. You see the White House garden. What else do you see?
Well, part of that, though, is because you needed to have the natural light. So they all are outdoor scenes. No interior scenes. And the movies reflect, I mean, we all now can do these movies on our smartphones,
right?
But before we had smartphones, we had camcorders, and some of us go back to VHS tape, right?
Yep. You know,
the movies reflect everything that every one of us has done. On filming a vacation, filming a family event. So when they get to Washington, you see these things of the Washington Monument, the Lincoln Memorial. Isn't there one with Lou kind of getting out of the car?
Yeah, getting out of a car and walking up to the camera. And you see also in that film a blimp, a dirigible floating around Washington. So who wouldn't? It's like, oh, that's an interesting. And
right, you would train the camera up there, yeah.
Right. I don't know how common it was to see blimps fly by in Washington or anywhere else in, you know, 28, 29, 30.
There are films of their grandchildren. And, of course, the grandchildren shown are the ones that would stay in the White House from the fall of 1930 to April of 31. Their father, Herbert Hoover Jr., caught tuberculosis. He was recovering in Asheville, North Carolina. And so his children were left at the White House, Peggy, Ann, and Pete, as well as baby Jean. But the film shows them in the backyard at Stanford University outside of the home that Lou designed.
Wow. So what can you learn from these films? I mean, they've been in the collection for a long time. You've seen them in black and white. Does seeing them in color tell you anything new?
Yes, and that it makes it more accessible to a modern audience that is used to having everything in color. Again, as you get older, you get the appreciation for black and white and living in a black and white world. And, of course, you know, my background in Lincoln, everything was black and white then. But this, I think, puts them – it makes them more approachable, more accessible, more like us, because it's how we see the world now. Everything is in color. The one thing that would have helped would be audio. You know, short of that, the other thing that I think makes these films incredibly important is that they are unconsciously taken. The Hoovers aren't playing for a public audience. They're not trying to create an image or a public persona. And they were only intended for family members. And so you get to see Herbert Hoover laughing, smiling.
Which is not the image that most of us have of Herbert Hoover. We see him in his black hat and his black jacket. And, of course, the times were really difficult that
well,
he was president.
Well, and he was
through.
A Quaker, right? He kind of, as a public persona, he was all business. He didn't show emotion. And what these films do is they humanize him. And show that show them in unguarded moments, unscripted moments.
I know that everyone at the Hoover Museum that I've ever talked to is almost unabashedly in love with Lou Henry Hoover because she was such a remarkable, interesting woman. I find it interesting and intriguing to know that she was an early adopter of new technology, which it plays into what we already know about her, that she was constantly learning and innovating. But Lynn, what do you feel you learned about Lou Henry Hoover from looking at these films and now knowing that she was using this brand new technology to take the films?
Yeah. In some ways, I'm not surprised. It just kind of follows the line of, you know, she studied at Stanford, was the first woman in the sciences, you know, would go off on a Saturday expedition with, you know, several other men to go. We're going to go climb up this hill and study the rocks and look at the angles of the hillside and such, and, you know, just right along with the men. So she wasn't afraid of that. I think she enjoyed the technology, and, you know, Hoover worked a lot with radio in the early 20s and while he was Secretary of Commerce. So it just is kind of a natural progression that they would jump on the newest technology and would carry on. And there's other films we have that are not – they're just old black and white films that you can see Lou playing with Margaret Watson and Pete and Peggy Ann and several of the dogs. And a few times you can see film – the film includes shots of the kids holding the camera and looking at it and, you know, looking at it or maybe trying to take film with it. Is in that film, you could see at some points, like all of a sudden it's kind of canted or, you know, their heads are cut off, or it was like we're looking at the bush at bush level rather than looking down.
So we get some insight into her as a mother and a grandmother,
right,
too.
Right. It's like, this is cool and I want you to know about it, too, and not be afraid of it. And, you know, this is what's going on.
So, all right. The public is going to get to see these films in their entirety on Wednesday. You've already got the teaser reel out. It was in the Washington Post. So you've been getting a lot of attention for this. But, Lynn, what are you most excited for people to see? Is there a favorite moment that you have in the films that you really can't wait to share with people?
I actually enjoy watching Lou walking through the gardens. And she's, you know, playing catch with the dogs or fetch. And she really chucks that ball. It's not just, you know, it's an underhanded toss, but it's like, oh, that's pretty far. You know, she wasn't just a little sissy, you know, here's a few feet and, you know, go fetch doggy. She was just really winging it. And so was the other woman that appears that was like, who is this woman? But the other mystery lady in blue dress, she's chucking it too. So they're, you know, aggressive, athletic, and, you know,
and
strolling
real
through the gardens, real. And that was the thing that when I was looking at these in the black and white format, what color are these roses? What does the garden look like? I've seen plenty of photos of the rose garden. There's a lot of red roses. So are they going to be red? Are they going to be yellow, pink, blue, some of each? So it's sort of, you know, that anticipation of, you know, opening the gift. What's it going to be? And in a way, you kind of think of Lou, the family donating these films to us is their gift to us. And now being able to restore them back into the color and show them premiering world premiere on her birthday is our gift back to her.
Tom, what do you hope people take away from seeing these films?
Well, once again, how unique Lou is as a person. The blue Canterbury bells that are in the planters in the White House were specifically indicated by her to Ulysses S. Grant III, who's the Commissioner of Public Buildings and Parks, as what she wanted planted, because that was President Hoover's favorite.
Oh.
So she wanted to make sure there were plenty of blue Canterbury bells. The other thing, though, is Alonzo Fields. You see these frames showing not only the gardeners in the outside of the White House, but Alonzo Fields, who later became the head butler. And Fields, in his memoirs, talks about how the Hoovers made them all feel like family.
Oh, nice. Well, we are out of time, but thank you both so much for being here. Tom Schwartz, director of the Herbert Hoover Presidential Library and Museum, and Lynn Smith, the audiovisual archivist for the Library and Museum. This is Talk of Iowa.